My name's Stan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Stan.
I got drunk and I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you. grateful to be here. Thank you, Chris, for kicking it off. You know, I didn't think he was going to show up when I asked him. No. I want to say welcome to all the new people to Alcoholics Anonymous, let you know that you're welcome here in this fellowship, and we want you to stick around long enough to hear the message, and that message is hope and how we're recovering from a seeming open state of mind and body. And those aren't my words. Those words come out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. In the forward to the first edition, it tells us precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. And I followed everything in this book, and this book has changed my life, you know. And who can imagine, you know, I remember going to church and I'd hear Bible thumpers and they're talking about Jesus and they're this and that and the Bible this and the Bible that, you know, and I'm watching the same guys go out and get loaded and do the same thing, you know, and I've tried it before myself, you know. I went to church, I got baptized, and you know what, I completely forgot that I was an alcoholic, I forgot that I was an addict, I forgot that I was selfish and self-centered, and what do? I go right back to the same thing that makes me feel comfortable, you know. And Alcoholics Anonymous has changed my perception on life. It's changed my perception on the how I view the world and how I view myself and how I view other people, you know. And thank God for that, because I was so wrapped up into here, you know. So I'm going to share a little bit about my life, like if anybody cares. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. So what happened was... I was born and raised right here in Santa Maria, like, duh, like, for real. Anyways, yeah, I was born and raised right here in Santa Maria. I had two great enablers. I was moms and pops, you know. I don't know if anybody can relate to that, you know. I had a different childhood than most people, you know. And some people in here might know that, the life that I lived, you know. And what happened was my mother, where I grew up, was in a middle, middle class side of town in Santa Maria. You know, I went to Miller School, and my playground was the projects, because that's where my dad worked. My dad was a barber right there in Pepper Tree Plaza. I don't know if anybody remembers that, but you know, and so I went to school on one side of town, and I came, and my playground was the other side of town. So I was kind of mixed up because I had two different lifestyles going on at the same time, you know. You know, I had the middle class side of town going on, and then over here was a totally different class side of town, you know. And I had family there, and so I grew up with them, and I remember as I was growing up, I wanted to be just like everyone who lived in that neighborhood, you know. And so I went to school on this middle class side of town, and they were like, whoa, what's wrong with you, man? You dress different, you talk different, and so I felt different all the time, you know. Also, my household, my mother and my father were I'm the only child between them. And so they all had, I had a bunch of half-brothers and half-sisters, and I felt different, and they made sure I felt different, you know what I mean? So I like to isolate myself early on, you know? My father was a drinker, you know, he was probably overqualified for this program, but I'm not going to say he's an alcoholic, because I can't diagnose him, you know? But he loved to drink, man, and he loved to gamble. So my whole childhood was going back and forth to Vegas, back and forth to Santa Anita, horse racing, you know, Hollywood Park. You know, I did all that stuff with my dad, and he liked to hire trios or mariachis, and they hooped and hollered, and I was like, man, this is fun. But the only thing that was missing was alcohol for me, you know? You know, as I was growing up, my father liked to drink, and he would carry me on his shoulders, and he used to always have this little Coors six-pack little plastic case, and he would tell me, open up a beer for me, and I would open up a beer, and I'd take a drink, and I'd be like, oh, man, why did I do that, you know? But something about the effect afterwards is what I liked, you know? At 11 years old, I made a decision, a conscious decision on my own. I had a brother who always singled me out, and I always wanted to be just like them, because they like to ride bikes and steal bikes and, you know, go do all kinds of fun stuff like that. And one day he invited me. He had a little party and he invited me to hang out with them. And I was like, yeah, I'm finally fitting in, right? And And I had, they gave me some beers, they gave me some weed, and I took a hit of that weed, and I took a lot of drinks of that beer, and that was it. I don't remember anything. I remember waking up the next morning and my friend going, "Hey man, you were off the hook last night." And I was like, "I don't remember shit, man." You know? I was a blackout drinker from the beginning. And I'll tell you what, man, just from that little experience when I was 11 years old, man, every time I drank, I tried to control and maintain my drinking and enjoy it. But for some reason, I never got to enjoy it. Things always went bad, you know? So I like to share this story because it's my favorite story in the whole world and it amazes me. You know, when I was 11 years old, my mother went out to dinner one night and I got home from hanging out with the fellas. And I'm 11 years old, mind you. And so I went in the house and I found the keys to the car, and the car's sitting out front and nobody's attending to that car and nobody else was around. And I don't know if you noticed, but I got a big head because I like to think, you know what I mean? I like to figure shit out, man. And so I had a bright idea, you know? So I took off in the car and I went to the projects. I went and picked up a bunch of my little homies and we went driving around town and then we were drinking and smoking and all of a sudden, we're just driving the back streets, and one of my friends goes, "Hey, man, let's go to Broadway." You know, everybody cruised Broadway back then. And I was like, "Nah, man, nah. I mean, it's a bust. We're little guys, and we're in the car. Like, no, that's going to be a bust." And so as I'm telling him that, all of a sudden, woo, and we got pulled over. And it was a wrap. My father gave me my last great whooping. And afterwards, man, he started cracking up. And I was like, "Oh, man, something's wrong with this cat, man. What the hell?" And he was drunk. And he kept asking me, like, "Hey, so how far did you guys go? You know, what were you guys doing?" And I was like, "Oh, man, he's going to whoop my ass again." And what he did, he told me, he goes, "You know what? On your 12th birthday," because it was right before school started. And my birthday's in September. So it was right before school started. He goes, "When you turn 12, we're going to go to Vegas and you're going to drive." I'm like, "Oh, you're really drunk, right?" And on my 12th birthday, he rented a car and we pulled over right here on 166. And he was drunk. And I had one of my older stepbrothers with us. And he goes, "Get in the front." And I had a little homie. He's not little no more, but back then he was real short. Now he's like probably taller than me. But anyways, I took him with me and we drove all the way to Vegas. And mind you, at 11 years old, at 12 years old, I've been back and forth to Vegas enough times to get there blindfolded. And what happened was, I remember for one instance, we stopped in Barstow to gas up because that's usually the gas point. And we gassed up and you know, it's kind of natural for a kid to go in there and pay for gas, you know what I mean? Hey, it's for my dad, you know, the car. Anyways, I went in there, I paid for gas, and I came back out and I pumped it. And before I got in the car, I looked back and the attendant was looking out the window like, "Oh my God," like he was tripping. I just got in the car and I smashed. We got to Vegas and I woke up my dad. I go, hey, we're here, get up. And he's like, "Oh shit, what the... how do we get here?" I'm like, "Well, obviously you're in the back seat and I'm up here in the front seat, you know?" So it's kind of crazy, you know, growing up. So my drinking career started to progress little by little. You know, 12 years old, you're not drinking every day, but I was drinking more often than not, you know? And when I was 13 years old, I'm gonna share this, and this is part of my story. Drugs are a part of my story, but when I was 13 years old, I took a hit of cocaine for my very first time. And that was the beginning of the end. My life just started going crazy, man. I used to ride this skateboard, and I loved this skateboard, and I also wanted to be a cholo, so I was a cholo on a skateboard, you know. I was mixed up, man. I was really mixed up, man. I had long hair, and it was dyed. Man, I was all wrong, man. I was all over the place, you know. I was confused, man. I didn't know what I wanted to be, you know. Yeah, and so with that just came that lifestyle, man, of drinking, smoking weed, hard drugs, and there was very few women or girls that were in my life at that time, you know, because the things I was doing was a lot more important. Drinking and getting high was a lot more important than anything else, you know. So, you know, I stayed 3 years in junior high, but 2 years, but I got held back, and finally they were just like, "Get the hell out of here." And I was like, "Okay, I'm gone." And I went to high school and I just kind of just messed up high school. I just ruined it, you know. And the next year came around, and they just told me, we don't even want you here. And I'm like, all right. So they sent me to this school called El Puente. And all you had to do was do a half a credit there, and you were gone. And it was party every day, man. I got to that school, and I was drinking and smoking every day, you know, all the way until I turned 18. And by this time, man, my little cocaine addiction progressed. It was bad. And right when I turned 18, I left. I dropped out. That same day, I went to school, and I told them, F you guys, I ain't coming back. I was so rude and disrespectful at that time, you know. I never really got in trouble because I kind of had everything that I wanted, you know. My parents gave me whatever I wanted. And all my friends kept going to juvenile hall, YA, and going to camp and all that. And I'd be like, you know what? Hey, you guys are going to go do what you're going to do. I'll be right here waiting. You guys come back and we can party at my house. And my house was always the party house, you know. And so I didn't really get in trouble when I was a kid, you know, at all. And right when I turned 18, I dropped out of high school. And that same day, I moved out to the Bay Area because getting this stuff was more accessible on this one block. All I had to do was go down the block, and people just brought what I needed to them, to me, you know. And so my drinking and using progressed so bad. And I like to say that this is the first time that that great enabler, my mother, finally bailed me out of something. And she went out there and got me out of Oakland, got me out of the Bay Area. And I came back here, and I had a great idea, man. There I go with the great ideas. And my next great idea was, I just need a girlfriend, man. I just need someone to fill that void, and I'll stop drinking, I'll stop using, man, just for her. And I did, for about a day or two, about a week or so. And next thing you know, we're just doing it. We're doing it together, and we're fighting, and we're doing all this bad stuff. And let me tell you about the learned behaviors that I learned early on, is that, you know, living in the projects and all that, is I learned a different behavior on how to treat women, and it wasn't the right way. It wasn't the right way. And so I treated her very wrong and very disrespectful. And she ended up getting pregnant, and she left me. And she had every right to leave me. She had every right to leave me. And I remember she left me, and I just went crazy. I was on a suicide mission. I didn't know I was suicidal, but I was drinking and using, hoping I wouldn't wake up at all. You know, and I didn't know, like the things that I know now, I wish I knew back then, but I was being very selfish and self-centered. And I've been that way since I was a little kid. You know, my parents would give me whatever, I'd throw a tantrum, they'd give me whatever. And I didn't know that's how it was. And I heard a lot of people out of fear that I was scared that you're going to know who was really me, who I am, you know? So anyway, so yeah, she leaves me pregnant, and then not too much longer after she has my first child, that they give me a call and they say, hey, we took away this little girl, and we want to know if you want to come pick her up. She was living in Visalia, and so I went and picked up my daughter. I got temporary custody of my daughter, and the mom had been out doing whatever she was doing, you know, doing what us alcoholics do, and and so I tried quitting everything. I'm like, that's it. I got a child now. Don't call me no more. Leave me alone. And it wasn't much longer after that that I'm broke because I on top of drinking and using drugs, I love to sell drugs. I've been selling drugs since I was a kid, man, since I was young. And I tried stopping for as long as I could, and I could not stop. And I went back and putting my daughter in jeopardy and all that stuff. And I ended up catching a case, and I finally got in trouble, you know, after all this time. I've never been in trouble except for that one time I got pulled over at 11 years old. I don't think that counts. Anyways, so I got busted for possession for sales, illegal weapons and all that fun stuff. And I tried fighting the case because I thought I had a case. And the lawyer that I hired was a freaking tweaker, you know what I mean? And he was telling me, like, I'm going to get you out of this, brother. Do you got any more of that stuff? And I was like, what the hell? Like, what kind of fucking lawyer asked me that shit? And his buddy was a Bell's Bondsman. He's like, I'll get you out of jail. And this guy didn't do shit for me, but ended up getting me a year when I should have took the 6 months from the beginning. And so I like to share this story because this is very important to me. I ended up going to jail, and for my very first time in a year, I was thinking, oh my God, I'm in jail for a year. And I get in there, and I have this guy who, he introduces me to a God of my understanding. you know. I started thumping the Bible and doing all this Bible stuff, and we're singing all these Bible songs and all this, right? And what happened was, this guy who brought me to understand this God, he ends up getting out. And we're like, yeah, brother, get out there, find a church, get baptized, woo, 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 be a service. And this guy ends up coming back about a month later, sucked up. And I used to work out with him. And man, this guy used to, he would get huge, man. And he taught me all about working out. And he comes back hella sucked up. And I was just looking at him, like, try not to look at him with disgust. But an elder guy came up to me, and he goes, hey, man, it's not even about the messenger, man. Did you get the message? And I brought that. I carried that for a long time, you know. It's not about me carrying this message up here. It's about the message of hope that we carry. That if you're sick and suffering like I was when I showed up here to Alcoholics Anonymous, that you have a chance, man, to get outside of that hopelessness. And so I just kept doing what I do, and I got out of jail, and I got back with that mom, and we got back together, and then she ended up pregnant again, and then there I go. I do what I do, man. I get loaded, and I go out and do stuff, and end up back in jail. And while I was in there, she goes, look, I'm going to church, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, you know, I'm doing right. If you want to come and join us, you're more than welcome to. And so I got out, and I got baptized, and we got married, and oh my God, that was a big mistake. No. Got married. An hour later, we're arguing at freaking hometown buffet. But hey, you know, that's how we do it. That's how we do it. And this guy, he threatens my family. And the first thing I want to do is go back to my old ways. And I'm making phone calls to get a strap. And I'm going to go shoot this guy. And my wife comes up to me while I'm on the phone with somebody. And she goes, Perils, you're going to go kill somebody and end up, we have to go see you every weekend behind a glass. And I was like, damn. You know, reality hit me. And her mom was living out in Oklahoma. And she goes, you guys can come out here and stay with us for a little while. And so we went out to Oklahoma. And I didn't become a cowboy. But and the people were hella nice out there, you know. And it was different, man. And I thought I was going to be different out there. And I was thinking, you know, I'm going to move out to Oklahoma. There's going to be no drugs, like no alcohol, man. They have a low point, low percentage, you know. And the liquor store, in order for me to buy liquor, is like between a certain hours during the week, and they don't sell it on the weekends, you know. But you put me in the middle of the jungle in Africa, and I'm going to know who's doing what to get outside of here. And I found them people right away. I was working with them, you know. I got two jobs. I used to work two jobs. I would walk 3 miles a day. You know, I would tell my kids these stories. I walked 3 miles a day in Oklahoma. Let me tell you, man, there's snow and then there's black ice. And I don't know if you know what black ice, but I had to crawl in this shit to work one day. Because you can't see it, man, and you just go, whoo. And I do that enough times, man. I'm surprised I don't have back problems. But anyways, you know, and it gets hot and humid, and it's like walking out in a sauna because it's like about 115 degrees with the humidity level is so high, man. You can't even breathe. And I used to do all this for my kids and my family because I loved them, you know. But something happened with my wife, man, to where she didn't trust me no more. And it just got bad, real bad at home. Really bad at home. And I loved her so much, I allowed her to do whatever she wanted to me, including putting hands on me, disrespecting me, and hurting me emotionally a lot, mentally. And I took a lot of mental and physical abuse from that woman because I loved her, and I don't put hands on women. And so I had to walk away from that because I got tired of my children having to see that, you know. I got tired that when she walked away, my kids would come up to me and be like, oh, Dad, it's okay. Like, you know, rubbing my head and stuff. And I was just like, man, I can't live like this no more, you know. And everybody has their own shit. I don't hate that woman at all. You know what I mean? I do not hate that woman at all. And I learned to forgive her because of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I carried a grudge for a long time. I came back to Santa Maria. I left Oklahoma. I came back to Santa Maria. And that just caused a lot more wreckage, man. I didn't respect women. I didn't respect myself, you know. So I was a user and a taker. That's all I did was use people, and I would take from them, you know. And I share that because I'm not proud of the things I did, but I've come a long way from the person who I was to who I am today, and it means a lot to me, you know. I came back to Santa Maria and I just caused more wreckage. And then one day I just had another bright idea. And it's like, you know what? I just need a girlfriend again to settle down, man. Something different, man. Someone who's not like me. And I find someone who's just like me. You know what I mean? And we were so crazy, all loaded, man. We thought we were rappers and we were going to rap. And it was just me and her. It was like a Bonnie and Clyde thing. And we're just like, man, we're going to do this, man. And we started rapping and we started, man, it was all jacked up, man. We were just tweaked the fuck out. Oh, excuse my language. And she loved Alizé and we drank Alizé all day, every day, you know. It was something we heard on a song by Tupac and that's all we did, man, was drink Alizé and tweak the fuck out and rap, you know. And sure enough, man, I ended up back in jail. She ended up pregnant and it took a while. It took a while before she got pregnant, but she ended up pregnant and I was really looking forward to being with this child, man. And what happened was she had her baby and it was my little girl and I got to name her myself and she was the apple of my eye. She meant so much to me. And I named her Roselia, thinking that I might have made up that name until someone burst my bubble. I used to work at King Falafel, and I was telling this guy, yeah, we just had a little girl, man. I named her Roselia, man. That's an awesome name. He goes, oh, yeah, I went to the school with a girl named Roselia. And I was like, get the hell out of here. But that name meant a lot to me, you know? And she was the apple of my eye, man. She was everything to me. And I finally got introduced to the program because while I was in jail, she goes, look it, come with me to one meeting. And if you don't like it, and I was thumping the Bible again, you know, I thought it was somebody else, you know. And I kept telling her, all we need to do is go to church every day and we can do this. We can stay clean and sober. And she goes, come with me to one meeting, like I swear. And I was like, all right. And because of that, man, I'm here today. Because I came to a meeting, a 12-step meeting, and I heard the message that I needed to hear. And I'm going to share this real quick. And I went to that meeting with her. She had a sponsor. And so my first introduction was the first time I got busted. They tried sending me to, in 94, they tried sending me to Central Coast Headways to do this drug diversion class. And I wasn't serious about it at all. But they told me to go to a meeting. I went to a meeting. My very, very, very first meeting went like this. I went inside and it was at this place called the Dry House, Casa Seca. And it was smoked out in that room. I was like, what the hell? This is like the billiards. You know, what's going on over here? And I went in there and I heard a couple guys share and they were like, man, they were like tag teaming on the sharing thing. And after the meeting, I went to go rob their conversation. They're talking, you know, they're laughing and having a good time. And I just like, what do you do from here? Because I knew at this point that I might have had a problem. I went and I robbed their conversation. I was like, hey, so what are you guys going to do? You know, what do you guys do now? Like, what do you do for fun? I mean, this is a totally different life. And they looked at each other and they started laughing. They're like, we're going to fucking go get loaded right now. And I was like, what the hell? I'm like, these guys were talking that good shit. I'm like, come on, let's go. I got the sack. Anyways, so that was my first introduction to going to a meeting. So she's telling me to go to this meeting. Come on, come with me to a meeting. I'm like, a meeting of what? Like, what the hell's going on? What are you talking? I'm like, no, I'm not going to that meeting because look at them. People are fake. She's like, no, they're not. And so I said, you know what? All right, I'll be open to it. And I went with her and I heard what I needed to hear. And I heard it from a gentleman named Joe G. I'm going to say his name because he has passed away. But this man carried a message to me of hope. And he passed away just recently. And we worked the steps and we just kept working steps. And he kept telling me all this stuff that I needed to hear, man. The things I was always wondering about. The things about myself. And I'll tell you what, man. From that time until now, man, I haven't enjoyed my drinking or using. You guys fucked it up, man. And if you're new, man, that's what we're going to do, man. We're going to fuck up your drinking if you decide to go back out, you know. Excuse my language, I cuss a lot, I apologize, but anyways, I'm going to say fuck anyways. So, I stuck around for a little while, I was down at the Lano Club, man, I was volunteering day and night, and my relationship got all bad with her, because I was paying more attention to what was going on outside of the home, when I wasn't paying attention to what was going on inside the home. And so our relationship got kind of rocky. I just said, you know, she's like, I was there, and there was this guy who had some time, and I'd been there every day behind this counter, and he would always come and buy coffee, and we would talk, and then one day he comes in, and they were always helping people out, right? And so he comes in one day, and he goes, hey man, don't you got kids? And I was like, yeah. I was thinking maybe you might help me out with a little something. And I was like, yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. He's like, why don't you get a fucking job, man? And I was like, whoa. Like, for reals? He's like, you're here all day, man. You got kids. This is not paying rent at home. And I said, you know what? You're right. And so I went out and got a job at Denny's. And then we got a place that was just right across the street from Denny's, right behind the mobile right there. And people from recovery, they suited up and they showed up and they helped us out, man. And we didn't have nothing. Next thing you know, we have everything. And so I become a workaholic. And going to work is a lot more important than going to meetings. Going to work is a lot more important than checking in with my sponsor, and especially praying. And after I got loaded, I eventually got loaded. And afterwards, man, my sponsor asked me, he goes, did you pray? And I said, you know what? I hadn't prayed in about a month. You know, it's very important that I stay connected with this God in my understanding, you know. And so it was hard for me to get back, man. I ended up in detox, and I ended up doing detox all wrong. You know, I hooked up with someone in detox, and I was in love, man. It was love at first sight, you know what I mean? I don't know if anybody can relate to that, but, you know, it was like, she's new, I'm new, we're both on this path, and it was all wrong, man. It was all wrong. And so I kept going back and forth and back and forth, and the judge wanted to give me all this time, and then he finally said one day, he goes, you know what, I'm sending you to the Santa Barbara Rescue Mission. And this was in 2003, and so I went to the Santa Barbara Rescue Mission. I was there for about a little over 8 months, and then they kicked me out of there because I was fraternizing with the women across the street. But but I'll tell you what, man, I was getting loaded the whole time I was there. I was getting loaded, man. So right after that, I knew eventually at some point in time I'm going to end up going to prison. And I did. 2004, at the end of 2004, it was the first time I ever went to prison. And to be honest with you, man, I was scared. I didn't want to go to prison. Like, hell no. And I went in there, and I did the best that I could. I ended up on a level 2 in Tehachapi, and I was still going to church, and I was trusting God through all this. And I ended up in a level 2 Tehachapi, and I got ordained on that yard. You know what I mean? I was going to be the next Billy Graham, because, you know what, I'm a Christian, and I follow Jesus. I'm a holy roller, man. I know that Bible inside out. You know, and that was my thinking. I was set on that. This is what I'm going to do. And I remember I got out, and I'm a real alcoholic, man. My thinking changes like that. If I'm not paying attention, my thinking is going to change like that. And for some reason, when they tell me, all right, you know, they send me to R&R, I put on my little dress outs, my whole thinking is starting to change already. You know, I'm starting to feel like, hey, I'm somebody. You know, I just went to prison. I'm getting out, man. You know, I can't wait to tell everybody I was in prison, you know. And I got out, man, and about 6 hours after I paroled, man, I was drunk and loaded. And those little credentials that they gave me that I walked outside of that prison with were gone. Still to this day, I have no idea where they ended up. And I just went from Tehachapi straight home. And a couple of drinks in between, you know. And when I got home, the party was still going, you know. I'm a level 2. They let me out on a Saturday, and I don't have to be there till Monday. Man, I did what I did. And I do what a true alcoholic does, and that's what happened. You know, and then, once again, man, that ball just kept rolling. And my parole officer, he kept giving me breaks, you know. I lasted about 6 months, and I ended up going right back, you know. First violation, got out. I was out for like 3 days, and I caught another term and a violation. And it just kept going back and forth, man, back and forth. But I'll tell you what, every time I kept going back and forth, I kept thinking about, where's my real friends at? And my real friends were the friends that I had in 2001 when I first met, when I went to Alano Club, you know. And I remember I would drive by the Alano Club, and Saturday night, everyone's outside. It's a big speaker meeting, and I just kept wanting to get back in. Because the life I'm living out here is not living at all. I'm dying on the inside. I'm dying on the inside, you know. I'm a real alcoholic. The alcoholic that the book talks about, a doctor's opinion says, I drink for the effect. produced by alcohol. I didn't drink for any other reason, you know? And I'm a cheap vodka kind of guy. I always say cheap vodka because, man, that was my first choice. But if you're buying, I'll drink whatever you're buying. Believe me, it don't matter. You like that high-class shit? Let's drink it, as long as you're buying. But if I had to come out of pocket, I'm buying the cheap stuff. I'm sorry. You don't like it? It's all right. Plenty for me. I used to smoke Newports. I used to smoke Newport cigarettes. And nobody likes menthol. That's all right, because it's more for me. Sorry, man. Sorry about your luck, man. Better get right or something. Anyways, so I just kept going in and out, man, in and out. And like I said, man, drugs are part of my story. I love methamphetamine with my cheap vodka, and that's how I live, man. That's how I live. And I'd rather not pay for the drugs. I'd rather sell them so I can pay for my own. And that's how I live, man. I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop for nothing. My daughter ended up getting diagnosed in 2007, the apple of my eye. My first term, I had another boy. My daughter was diagnosed in 2007 with leukemia, and man, it hit me like a ton of bricks. But I'll tell you what, man, I was on top of my game at that time, that I couldn't let that stuff go in order for me to care for my daughter. And I felt like a piece of shit the whole time. I should be there with her every time she's having her chemotherapy. You know, I should be there anytime her blood's being drawn. I should be there every time she's having a checkup and going to see the doctor. You know, I should have been there, but I couldn't stop, man. You know? Self-will can hardly be a success for a guy like me. I couldn't stop on my own for nothing. It just wasn't working out for me. And all I can do is just be like, you know what, God? I trust that you're going to do what you're going to do. And that's about all I can say is a little prayer. You know? So I ended up getting in trouble one more time. And my parole officer kept telling me, you know what, Stan? They're going to lock you up, man. You're going to do some serious time because I'm doing chicken shit, little violations here and there. You know what I mean? And he goes, man, they're going to end up giving you time, man. And I caught another possession. And he said, you know what? I'm not even going to violate you. I'm going to let the county deal with it. And 2008 was the last time I went to prison on a violation. I got out, and that's what happened. And I started going to court, and they ended up sending me to the rescue mission one more time. And I was like, oh, God, not this place again. But I got there, and I knew what I needed to do because I remember everything I learned from 2001. So I ended up at a meeting. It was a men's stag in Santa Barbara, and there was this guy, and I like sharing this story, too. There was a guy that I showed up there. I still had my big old Dickies jacket, and this guy kept coming up to me, and he kept going, man, that's a nice jacket, man. That brings back memories. And I'm like, all right, yeah, cool, thanks. And I would just have my head down. I go, you know what? I got to ask somebody to be my sponsor. And he kept going, yeah, man, that reminds me. Last time I was in Northwest ISO. And I was like, man. I'm like, all right, yeah, cool, whatever. And he just kept bugging me about my jacket. And it went, so, man, that's a badass jacket, homie. And I thought he was white because he was light complected. And so I looked up and I'm ready to tell him something because I thought he might have been G-A-Y, whatever you want to call it. And I don't get down that way. Not that I got anything against it, but I was getting ready to tell him, hey, you need to beat it, homie. And I looked up at him, and what I seen in his eyes is something I want to have today. I seen peace in his eyes. I seen calmness in his eyes. And I could tell right away, right when I looked at him, that he'd been there, done that more than me. He'd been in and out of prison, that he's been doing this thing for a long time, and now he's changed. And that's what I wanted. That's what I look for today. You know? And I asked him to be my sponsor. We worked the steps, and I got busy, man. I got busy right away. I completed that program. I had my three oldest kids. They had been taken away from their mom at this time. And I remember I was getting letters a lot as I was getting out of prison. I got all these letters that were telling me, look, we got your kids. Do you want your kids? Come to court. Show up to court. And I remember I got out, and I went to that court all drunk and loaded. And I was telling them, they're like, you can't see your kids. So I thought it was something against me because I just got out of prison. I was like, man, that's fucked up. You guys are already judging me and this and that. And they're like, no. And I was like, what do you mean, man? Why won't you let me see my kids? And they're like, it's the law. I was like, could you imagine that? you know. I didn't know it was the law, but I was ready to fight about it, though, you know. And so I got out, and I went back to that life, and that's why I ended up in the arrest commission. I remember calling up that social worker, and I told that social worker, look, I'm willing to do whatever it takes just to see them, because from my understanding, you guys want to adopt my kids out. And they're like, yeah, we got the family. They want to adopt them. And I go, well, what can I do just to be able to see them? I go, I don't want my kids to go on in life thinking that I didn't try and do my best. And they said, all right. So they let me see my kids. And so while I'm in that program, I'm visiting my kids. I'm doing everything that they want me to do. I'm doing parenting. I'm doing all this other stuff. And next thing you know, they called me up after three months that I've been there. They called me up and they told me, hey, would you like custody of your kids? And I was like, what the fuck? And I started crying on that phone. I said, hell yeah. Hell yeah. And I got custody of my three oldest by the time I completed that program. Came back to Santa Maria, started doing it out here. My daughter went into remission in February of 2010. And come August, she had a relapse of leukemia, and it came back, and it was killing her. And I had a father who passed away August 22nd of 2010. That man was my best friend. I trusted him with everything. And he passed away on me. And what I do is I call my sponsor, and I got to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. The last conversation I had with my father, and I'm a firm believer of this, the last conversation I had with my father was I was on my way to Santa Barbara, to 5 East, the children's section, not the mental health section. Anyways, to go be with my daughter, and my dad was like, my dad knew what was going on, and he had so many strokes that it was hard for him to talk, and he goes, you go be with your daughter. You go be with your mija, all right? I said, all right, Pops, I love you. And he goes, I love you too, but you go be with your daughter right now. I go, okay. I hung up the phone. That Saturday, he passed away. My daughter passed away November 24th, the day before Thanksgiving. And I'm a firm believer that my father passed first, so that way when she got to heaven, you know the rest. And he got to be there for her. I'm a firm believer of that. And from that point, man, I stayed clean and sober through all that. But what happened was, I like to share this, it's very important, that I went from the program of recovery to straight ego. It was all about me. It was all about, look what I can walk through. Look what I can walk through. You know? And I have to remember that. I got a sponsor who calls me out on stuff. And I have to remember that. That I need to stay out of here. I need to stay out of ego. You know? Things are going to happen in my life. How am I going to react? You know? Where's my integrity really going to show is how I act when I leave outside of these rooms. And who I become. You know? Because of that little girl, I'm wearing purple tonight. I wear purple in honor of my daughter. Because that was her favorite color. And there's a lot of other colors, but I chose purple because it's a color I wasn't fond of until then, you know. And I wear purple. Every time you see me wearing purple, it's in honor of my daughter. I don't like the color purple. No, I'm just kidding. So what happened was, I went into ego. I tried getting in a relationship again, and what happens? I got loaded. And you know why I got loaded? Because I wasn't willing to do the work. I got a resentment. Things didn't go my way. And I got a big resentment, man. I called up my sponsor. I told him, look it, I got the resentment. And it was bad. And the next thing you know, I'm thinking about getting loaded. So I wrote out the resentment. I called up my sponsor. My sponsor, he heard my inventory. And then he goes, this is what I want you to do. Is I want you to go back and read them a couple little pages about when we get home and we retire, or no, when we get home and we take the book off the shelf. He's all, you do that little prayer, that 7-step prayer. He's all, when you're done with that, I want you to go and grab a sponsee, go grab somebody. And that was the one thing I wasn't willing to do. That was the one thing I wasn't willing to do. I wanted to sit inside of here and just nonstop thinking about getting loaded. And the next morning I had, cause I had already went from recovery to ego. I'm in insanity. I'm living in that. I'm trying to justify everything, you know? And so the next morning, man, I prayed and I said, check this out, God, if you're not here at 2 o'clock, I'm going to get loaded. I'm going to get loaded. And I tell you what, my phone was blowing up, man. Facebook, everything. Everyone was smoke signals. You know what I mean? Man, God was showing up, but I was so caught up in insanity that I drank again. I got loaded and I beat myself up for almost 2 years out there. I was going to school. I dropped out of school. I took out all these loans from school and I have nothing to show for. I ended up in this car, you know, one more time. I ended up in my car, sleeping in my car. I went out to Goleta to go visit a friend. He was letting me stay there. The next thing you know, he kicked me out. I'm back in the car. The next thing you know, my car gets towed away. Next thing you know, I'm sleeping in a park, man. And I'm still managing to sell drugs and do all that fun stuff. And I ended up in this park, man. I had people going all the way out to Goleta just to go see me. And I was sitting in the park one day and it was a nice little spot at this park. You know, I had the restroom right there. I would go inside there, get loaded. And I would pour my cheap vodka inside a water bottle. And I was on paradise, man. It was a paradise. It was a vacation. You know what I mean? I was an island unto myself, is what Clancy I would say. And one day it just hit me right here. I had already caught a case. I caught another case. And since I wasn't on parole or probation, they couldn't hold me for much longer. And it just hit me right here that I'm going to die out here, man. I'm a diabetic, I got high blood pressure, and I'm smoking like a train and drinking like a fish. And I came back to Santa Maria. I checked in this program they sentenced me to, and my counselor goes, hey, you might want to go in there and check out that group. And I went in there and checked out the group, and it hit me that, you know what, if I want to stay sober, I got to be around people who are doing the things to stay sober. I ended up going home and I see my daughter driving off. I go, where are you going? She's like, I'm going to a meeting. I have a daughter who's been in and out of these rooms too. And she goes, I'm going to a meeting. And I don't know why I didn't pick up that day. I had all day to do whatever I wanted. And I don't know why I didn't, because I had alcohol. I had drugs, but I didn't. I chose not to. This is May 30th, 2013. I showed up at that meeting. I seen a friend. I gave him a hug in the parking lot. And I walked inside and I seen a man who had been in and out of the, not in and out, but who I shared the rooms with in Santa Barbara out here. And I went and I asked him, hey, will you be my sponsor? And he said, yeah. And still to this day, when I talk to that gentleman, when I talk about that day, he's all, I don't know why I was at that meeting, because I never go to that meeting. So I'm a firm believer that it was by divine appointment. I told my friend when he first got here, I go, you know what? When the student's ready, the teacher will appear. And that was my story. That's been his story, and that's been quite a few other people's story, you know? It's because when I'm open to it, then I'm going to do it, and I'm going to see it that way. So I got here May 30th, 2013. I asked that gentleman to be my sponsor, and that obsession to want to drink or use has been lifted, man. Not kind of, sort of, maybe just a little. The obsession to drink has been lifted, but not the obsession to act out in selfish and self-centered behaviors hasn't been lifted. I wish that was. But no, I'm human. I'm human. I'm not exempt from that stuff happening. And I'm not exempt for that obsession coming back. But I do what's necessary here in Alcoholics Anonymous to stay sober and to help other people. I've never found it so important that I help other people than I have this time around. You know? Alcoholics Anonymous says, give me a life beyond what I ever imagined it could be. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're new, you probably want to throw up, and that's perfectly all right. You're in the right place, man. I like to share this. If you got a problem with God, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, man. If you got a problem with God, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're only here to get your court card signed, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, man. I can't express enough about how good this life that I have today, and I don't have nothing on the outside. Trust me, I'm still toothless, you know what I mean? That my teeth don't grow back just because I'm sober now and I'm spiritual. You know, that stuff don't happen, you know? I never got the red carpet. You know, I got here and my kids have every right to be like, no, I don't think so. You're not my father. And their kids, they could be like, no, you are not the grandfather. But because of Alcoholics Anonymous and the things that I've done here, my relationship with my kids is pretty good today. It's a lot better than it was, you know. And they trust me, you know. I got four grandkids, and I've been there for every four of the bird. I'm coming on a fifth, and I just talked to my daughter, and she said, you're there. I got a seat reserved for the birth. Could you imagine that? And like I said, man, when I was out there drinking in that park, I wasn't thinking about them at all. I wasn't thinking about them, you know. And today, I didn't push my way back into their life, man. I left myself open to, left them open to the idea whether or not they want to be in my life, and they do, you know. It could be rough, but you know what? It's all right. It's all right, because it could be worse. If I was to get everything I deserved, I'd be locked up or boxed up. Tell you that, you know. So if you're new, man, Alcoholics Anonymous works. You know, if you do the work around here, and doing the work is you get a sober day, have a sober day, May 30th, 2013. You get a sponsor and be willing to take some direction from someone other than yourself, you know. Because taking your own direction is what kind of landed you here in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. Trying to do the thinking on your own. So you get a sponsor. You want to get a sponsor who has worked all 12 of the steps. You really don't want a sponsor who has no experience in working all 12 of the steps, because it really ain't got much to give you. Because it says having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. It doesn't say a result of working the 1-2-3 waltz. It says a result of working these steps, that we carry the message of the alcoholic who still suffers. You know? And I learned that early on. Every sponsor that I've had has always been about service. It's always been about working and doing the things that we do around here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And for that, I'm forever grateful, you know. I thank everybody who showed up. I'd like to thank Evelyn for coming to every speaker freaking meeting this weekend. But it's been good, man. It's been a good run. And I met a lot of wonderful people in these rooms. And I invite you to keep coming back. That's all I got.